Okay. Get started. So as you can see from your paper, we're going to learn about humility today. And honestly, it felt kind of cliche to me to start with that. So there are things that we hear about all the time, and humility is one of those things. I just feel like sometimes we get sort of beat over the head with the same things. But, it's understandable. It's in the Beatitudes. It's one of Yeshua's core teachings. Blessed are the humble, for they will inherit the earth. Often also translated, blessed are the meek. And very similarly, blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. So clearly it's important, like one of the foundational teachings of Yeshua, but we've heard it a lot before. We're not supposed to be puffed up. Okay, we got it. It doesn't sound that complicated. But after studying a little bit of Musar, I would argue that we often misunderstand what humility really is and don't realize how deeply it should affect our lives. So tonight, maybe we can expand on what we already know about humility a little bit, look at a few of Yeshua's teachings, and get a little more explanation from the Musar teachers, and learn a few ways to practice and internalize humility. Since it's a key teaching of our master, and many Musar teachers say that humility is the root of divine service and a necessary foundation for acquiring any other good traits, seemed like a good place to start. But before I talk about humility specifically, I did want to talk a little bit about just the experience of self-assessment and trying to improve. It can get kind of old. It can get kind of depressing. It can turn into beating ourselves up about how terrible we are, which some people enjoy. Seems to keep them entertained. But for most of us, well, for all of us, it's not healthy to wallow in that. And for most of us, it's kind of a downer, and it just gets, like I said, depressing. It makes you feel just exhausted, constantly beating yourself up for all of your faults. But focusing on our faults and beating ourselves up is not what we're here to do. So honest self-assessment, of course, can make us a little uneasy at first, but it should lead to joy and maybe even excitement. In Everyday Holiness, Alan Marinus teaches us to look at our faults as our own custom-made spiritual curriculum. If there is ever something that you were really excited and motivated to learn, you would probably also be excited to take the placement test so that you could figure out, you know, your path, your unique path of learning in that subject. You could strategize about how to acquire your desired knowledge or skill. Like the kids this last year with Olive Champ, they were all super excited to take these placement tests and see where they were, what level they were at, so that they knew what level of curriculum to choose. So, with that in mind, we can start talking about humility itself. What is humility? Look at a couple of sources that give us a little definition. Here's just a snippet of how Bachya ibn Pakuda defines it in Duties of the Heart. He says, humility is the sole trait of lowliness, its acquiescence, and its lack of self-importance. It is one of the qualities of the soul, and when internalized, comes to expression externally in the form of gentle speech, a soft voice, meekness when angered, and restraint in taking revenge when one has the power to exact it. He goes into talking, after that he talks about different kinds of humility, different levels of humility. I wish we had the time to get into that much detail, but it was really hard to pare down pick things to talk about, because there's really so much to say. The way of the tzaddikim says, in his sort of the beginning of his, of that chapter, it's, we don't know who the author is, but the beginning of the chapter on humility, he starts to define it. And what is humility? It is self-effacement and lowliness of spirit and regarding oneself as not. A man is obligated at all times and on every occasion to be unworthy in his own eyes and lowly of spirit and soft of heart and broken-spirited. The root of humility is, vis-a-vis the Creator, thinking of oneself when he is yet calm and tranquil and healthy and rich, that the Blessed One has given him good of which he is not worthy. Let's take a look at one of Yeshua's teachings that touches on humility. You know that the rulers of the Gentiles oppress them, and the great ones dominate them. But for you, let it not be so among you. For the one who desires to be great among you is to be as a servant to you, and the one who desires to be the head among you is to be your slave. Yeshua uses, he starts out contrasting it with using the opposite characteristic to give us a contrasting idea. He's describing a little bit of pride and arrogance to explain what humility is by contrast. So maybe we can talk a little bit more about what pride is to help us do more of that contrasting, to understand the opposite of humility. Yeshua here is describing someone lording over others. And he says we're not to be that way. We're all put off by people who are obviously prideful and arrogant. We think of prideful people as bragging. Things always have to be their way. It's about what they want and what they need. They dominate people around them, like Yeshua describes in this teaching. They're only interested in their own opinion. They don't value other people's opinions. They don't tolerate criticism very well. And they focus on other people's faults and blame other people when things go wrong. Here's another example of one of Yeshua's teachings on humility from Luke 14. The other one, by the way, was Matthew 20, 25. A couple verses after that. Anyway, Luke 14, starting in verse 7. Now he told a parable to those who were invited. He was at someone's house for dinner. He told a parable to those who were invited when he noticed how they chose the places of honor, saying to them, when you are invited by someone to a wedding feast, do not sit down in a place of honor, lest someone more distinguished than you be invited by him, and he who invited you both will come and say to you, give your place to this person, and then you will begin with shame to take the lowest place. But when you are invited, go and sit in the lowest place, so that when your host comes, he may say to you, friend, move up higher. Then you will be honored in the presence of all who sit at the table with you. For everyone who exalts himself will be humbled, and he who humbles himself will be exalted. So we see that by putting others first, not seeking our own honor, that is the external expression of humility. But what about the person who always talks down about themselves? They're unsure of their own abilities. They always give in to what other people want and allow themselves to be taken advantage of. That seems like the opposite. So that must be humility. That also sounds like low self-esteem. Are we being taught to have low self-esteem? When I was learning about humility, I really wrestled with this because it can sound a lot like the same thing. It can even look like the same thing on the surface. But when I was digging into it a little deeper, low self-esteem, or as Alan Marinus calls it, low or self-degradation, is really the opposite of true humility, just as much as pride is. In Everyday Holiness, Alan Marinus, he teaches that self-degradation is an unholy distortion of true humility. He quotes Rav Abraham Isaac Cook saying, "Humility is associated with spiritual perfection. When humility affects depression, it is defective. When it is genuine, it inspires joy, courage, and inner dignity." Think about that. Joy, courage, and inner dignity. Are those things that you usually associate with humility? Or does it make you, does humility make you think of slinking in a corner and feeling bad about ourselves? Feeling like we're less worthy than everyone around us. I would like to understand what this genuine humility that Rav Cook is describing is all about. So, I've run across books by Rabbi Abraham Twersky before, and I've been interested in different subjects that he writes about, but noticed that he writes a lot about self-esteem. But self-esteem is one of those buzzwords that I grew up hearing way too much, so much, that it kind of makes me cringe a little to think about, I don't know, to say it so many times and to think about studying it. It's something that just was just so emphasized. You need to build people's self-esteem and that will fix everybody's problem. What does self-esteem even mean? So I kind of lost interest in it a long time ago. Just felt like one of those words that nobody really knows the definition to. But as I was wrestling with the difference between humility and this distorted, low self-image, I found myself suddenly interested in books that never caught my eye before by Rabbi Twersky. I found one of his books, Life's Too Short, through our library system, and I haven't finished reading it yet. He writes that low self-esteem can lead to many harmful patterns in life, including, but not limited to, fear of rejection, demanding recognition — that sounds a lot like the prideful person as well — codependence, hypersensitivity, narcissism, fear of happiness and fear of failure, and compartmentalization, which I learned this week is getting your identity only from one area of life that you feel good at. And it can also lead to depression. And he writes a lot about how it feeds into addiction and other more serious mental health issues. When someone has low self-esteem, they are constantly looking for validation from other people. Their eyes are focused on themselves in much the same way that someone who is proud and arrogant. Someone can think they are humble because they always give in to what everyone else wants, but underneath, they're just as self-focused as someone who behaves arrogantly. So we can see how closely related pride and self-esteem are with each other. Why do prideful people act the way they do? We described before some of the classic prideful behaviors. Why do they do that? Often to make themselves feel better, to make themselves feel important. Underneath their veneer, they're not sure they're so great, and any imperfection is a threat to their fragile ego. Underneath pride is most likely insecurity. So learning about both of those descriptions, a prideful person and someone with very low self-esteem, I could identify with elements of both. I've behaved both ways. So what is genuine humility? Remember from last class that character traits in Hebrew and Musar teaching are called midot, that is, measurements. That means that they need to be in proper measure. A mida is a measure. Yeah. Too far to one extreme is not good. too far to the other extreme is not good. The way Alan Moranis explains it in his book is that he explains it on this continuum, where on one end is self-debasement, and on the other end is arrogance, and the happy middle is humility. It's an accurate assessment of yourself, strengths and weaknesses and all. But it doesn't stop there. From that place of an accurate self-assessment, that place of humility, we can take our eyes off of ourselves and give honor to others, place the honor of others ahead of our own. But humility is not being a doormat. Someone might allow themselves to be trampled on because they feel like they don't deserve anything better. A humble person, on the other hand, chooses to put other people first because they don't need to grasp for every scrap of validation to feel like they're worthwhile. They give, but they give for a different reason. They give out of their own abundance. How can we do that? How can I do that? We have abundance. We have everything. We are daughters of Hashem. We're followers of King Yeshua. We just need to remember who we are, to realize that we have everything to give. So I imagined a different continuum to describe this. I'm not saying Alan Moranis' continuum is wrong. It describes something true. But I came up with a different continuum that helps me understand it better. So imagine this other continuum with me. On one end is humility. The far extreme, one side, is humility. And on the other extreme is self-focus. Both pride and low self-esteem would be on that side. So from this perspective, you can be absolute and extreme in seeking humility. You can see how far that takes you. The secret is, when you take your eyes off of yourself and you become a servant of all, the secret to not letting that make you into a doormat or someone that people just take advantage of is to figure out, when you take your eyes off yourself, to figure out what to focus on instead of yourself. So let's see if we can understand this a little bit better by talking about a few examples of what this might look like in real life. This is all kind of theoretical. Let's talk about some real life thought processes and situations. And in our discussion afterwards, you guys can probably expand on this. These that I wrote down here are based on things I read in the Gospels and several Musar sources. Kind of put these ideas in my head. I wish I had time to open up the books and go through and quote people more directly. But for now, you'll have to make do with my little distillation of ideas. Yeshua says we're to serve. If we're serving, but we're feeling like martyrs while we do it, then we're doing it wrong. If we're feeling puffed up about it, we're also doing it wrong. The correct feeling when we're serving, even if no one notices what we did, no one thanks us for what we did, is the simple joy that we have done what Hashem gave us the ability to do. Even serving others can be about me and my importance and how much I'm needed. But am I doing this because it needs to be done and Hashem put it in my path and gave me the abilities, or because I need to do it to feel important? Sometimes we're prevented from doing things by too much self-focus. Maybe we think a task is beneath our dignity to do. That's not for me to do. That's for someone with lesser abilities. They can handle that. Am I afraid maybe that I won't be good enough to do the job? Am I afraid that I'll make mistakes or be embarrassed? or that it will reveal the limits of my knowledge, and that will hurt my pride. Acknowledging someone else's good qualities, someone else's talents, doesn't make me any less. Putting someone else first does not make me any lower. Humble people do not become jealous of other people very easily. A humble person isn't going to be territorial or possessive about things or about space or about people, friends, or about status or position. A humble person can listen, truly listen to other people. They can make space and time for other people to express their thoughts and feelings and opinions without interruption, and truly try to understand where the other person is coming from. A humble person can listen to other people's opinions about them, about their work, listen to feedback, willing to take constructive criticism or instruction seriously. But on the other hand, they don't get obsessed, so obsessed with what other people think about them that it paralyzes them. It doesn't make them afraid of making their ability to listen to other people's opinions and criticism doesn't make them fearful of making someone unhappy. That's not humility. Fear of making anyone else unhappy is people-pleasing. A humble person, even a very knowledgeable one, is not afraid to admit what they don't know and learn from others. Here is a quote from The Way of the Tzaddikim. He says, "Another great form of humility is to study before the young and to ask them what one does not know, and not say, 'How can I study before him? How can I inquire of him? Is he not younger than I?'" Sometimes that can be hard in an environment like ours, where there's so much to learn. Some of us who've been around for a long time can be a little embarrassed when somebody else knows something we don't, or embarrassed when someone newer comes in and asks us and we don't know. With humility, it's easier to just shrug and say, "You know, I don't know. I can maybe help you find out. Maybe we can learn this together." I often have to say, "I forgot." I probably knew at some point. With humility, you can admit when you're wrong. And you can even say it out loud. Often when we finally are confronted with the fact that we're wrong about a fact or something that we did, the best we can bring ourselves to do is just sort of walk away and huff. But to just say, "You know what? You make a good point. I made a mistake." That takes humility. Humility is also really closely related to courage. It takes courage to say something like that. Are you willing to be the one to apologize first? Do I keep track of how many times I apologize first? And think, "Well, by now it must be their turn." Why not? Why not be the first to apologize, especially if there was wrong on both sides? Why not be the first one to say, "I'm sorry, this is what I did wrong"? A humble person, this one is really difficult for me. Most of these are really difficult for me. But this one I had to face a lot recently. A humble person does not always need to explain themselves, even if it will make them look better. They don't always need others to think that they were right or to understand where they were coming from. A humble person is not easily angered, because they're too preoccupied with what they ought to be doing in service of Hashem. They don't have time to notice the missteps of other people. So those are just a few ways that I could relate to, that this manifests in real life, in everyday life. So how can we develop humility? How can we get better at it, internalize it, change our natures, not just learn about what a good character quality it is. We need to spend time on it. Things, knowledge and skills don't happen without spending at least some time actually practicing them. The first step is to just evaluate where you stand with humility. Learn about it and compare that to what your life looks like. Notice also when you do have genuine humility. Look for areas where you need to improve. In areas where you're too self-focused, think about why that might be. What are you afraid of? What is the insecurity there? What's the worst that could happen? And in those areas, there's areas in our lives where it might be easy to be genuinely humble, and areas in our lives where it's more difficult. We have touchy spots where it's harder. So in those areas where it's harder, you find that either low self-esteem or arrogance start bubbling over. In those areas, focus on them and start thinking in a humble way. Everything that we have, our intelligence, our wisdom, our property, our money, our talents, even the struggles and difficulties that we have overcome, and our advantages in life, all of those are a gift from God. He handed them to us. None of those make us better or more worthy than other people. If another person had been handed what we were handed, who knows what they would have done with it? Maybe they would have even done better. We don't know. None of that makes us better than other people. Even our ability to use what we were naturally given, even our ability to think about self-improvement, or the fact that we are in an environment that encourages that, all of that is a gift from God. So looking at all of what you have, what God handed you, whatever that is, it's not the same as what he handed someone else. Everything that you have is also a responsibility. That is also humbling, to know that it's not whatever I look like, whatever abilities that I have, relationships that I've been given, all of those are not just for me to feel proud of. They're a responsibility for me to use to serve Hashem, to serve other people, to serve the kingdom. So if you have a lot, if you look at yourself and you have a lot, that should weigh heavily on you and be humbling, because it's a huge responsibility that you have. So with all that, these are the things that I hope you'll all work on with me this month. Two pieces of homework, actual homework, and I wrote them on your page. We're gonna break up into discussions and make, while we talk and sit around discussing further with each other, I'm gonna hand out little blank index cards and some colored pencils, and you're gonna write the characteristic humility. If you want to learn to write it in Hebrew, we can do that too. And underneath, write a phrase of some kind that will help you remember what it's about. The one that Alan Marinus suggests it was either in his book or an online Musar course that I was looking at. The phrase that he suggests is, take your place and make room for others. I like that a lot. It reminds me of all sides of it. Taking your place acknowledges that you have a place. You have something to offer. But it's also humbling. It's not someone else's place. Your place isn't bigger than whatever Hashem gave you. So it's humbling and empowering. It's freeing, and it's also limiting. My place means that I can embrace it and grow into it and explore it, but it's not someone else's place. It's limiting in that way, and that I can't infringe on someone else's job. I can't be jealous of what they have, because that's theirs, it's not mine. But it also frees me from needing to be something that I'm not. It frees me from envy. It frees me from inferiority complexes, because I have my place and I'm making room for other people to have theirs. But when I was first making my own card on humility, a different phrase popped into my head that just, it meant something to me personally. It might not be what you need to hear, but it was what I needed to hear. And that was, it doesn't have to be me, and it doesn't have to be my way. Sometimes I think things that come across my path always have to, I have to do it because I need to feel important. Doesn't. Someone else might be better suited to that. Yeah, and I definitely want things my way, especially in my own household. But even outside of that, I break outside my own household sometimes and like, why don't people just do this way and this way and this? This is the answer. I've got the answer. So sometimes I have the answer, but sometimes I don't. So if a different answer comes along, I can let go of mine, God willing. So humility for some of us means we need to back off a little bit. But humility for other people might mean they need to have the courage to step out and step forward and do more. Do something outside what they've been comfortable doing. Face some fears. Be willing to put yourself out there. Not let pride get in the way too much. The other thing, so we're going to make the cards and just have humility and whatever phrase or Bible verse that's going to remind you what it is, that's going to speak to you, and tape it up somewhere where you're going to see it every day. Hopefully, I think in the morning would be a good time to do this, but you can find what fits in your life. Look at it and actually say the phrase out loud so your ears can hear it. It's amazing how much power just speaking things out loud has. The second thing that I hope you'll all do with me is journal, which sounds intimidating. Some people love journaling. For some people, it's a dreadful chore. I love journaling until someone else tells me to do it, and then it's a dreadful chore. So, but it doesn't have to be much. It doesn't have to be intimidating. I actually have little tiny journals that were super cheap that you can just take with you so you don't have to search around your house or wait till you have a chance to go buy one. Just take one home. Unless you have a journal that you'd like to use. Those are really small and may be difficult to write in. But try to be consistent about it. All you need is just a quick little sentence. Maybe before bed is a good time for you to do this. Just sit and reflect on the day. I always intended to do it before bed and then end up remembering in the morning. So, but just reflecting on the day and saying, how did I interact with humility today? Maybe I had a good day. Maybe there was something that happened where I was happy with how I responded. I was happy with how I handled it. It was genuine humility. Maybe there was something that came up that stirred something up in me that brought up insecurities or I acted arrogantly. Just jot it down quickly. You don't need to go into a whole long explanation or story. I always find that if I try to do too much, if my expectations are too high of what I'm going to sit and write out all the events of the day, I won't do any of it. So just even a couple words to remind yourself, just get it down on paper, what it is that you're thinking about. Or maybe you're not sure what humility means in a certain relationship or situation. Wrestle with it. Think about it. Pray about it. And write down, I don't know what to do about this. And if nothing happened that day, at least write down nothing happened today. Just be consistent about it. Take note of when you do things right. This is, like I said in the beginning, this is not just about tearing ourselves down and focusing on all our faults. Notice when you've got a good handle on this. Part of humility is to know what you're good at. So spend time writing those things down too. What do I have to offer that I am offering, even though sometimes I fail, and sometimes that, you know, failing is a little bit embarrassing, but I do it anyway to serve God. Or what am I good at that I'm not using right now because I'm a little afraid of what that would mean for me? Think about those things. It's good to have a solid grasp on your virtues so that you have a place to start in giving to other people. So the other thing that we should always be doing, I did write it down on your sheet. It's not really homework, but it's something that we should all do, is pray. Ask Hashem for help. All of our work and exercises, journaling, our little cards, all of our efforts aren't going to get anywhere without Hashem's help and His Spirit transforming us. So take the steps that you need to take. You're going to be better at figuring that out than anyone else. Ask Hashem to lead you if you're not sure. And admit that you can't change yourself. You need Hashem's help. There's a prayer in the Siddur, and I meant to bring some Siddurs in here so I could show you, but I could show you in our Siddurs maybe after and when we're discussing if you want to actually see it. But I put it on your page because this prayer expresses so many thoughts, beautiful thoughts on this theme. It's right after the Amidah. Sometimes there's a short version of it, sometimes there's a longer version of it. In our corporate services at Beth Emanuel, we usually say the Our Father in that spot, right after the Amidah. So you might not have read through it or really noticed it before. I personally love it because I like to say it in addition to the Our Father if I have time, because it spells things out in a way that I can relate to. It's very practical. It says things that I need to repeat as many times as I say the Amidah. I need to hear those words. So I'll read it out loud and give you a little commentary of things that I think about when I'm praying this prayer. My God, guard my tongue from what is harmful and my lips from speaking deceit. Let my soul be silent to those who curse me, and let my soul be like dust to everyone. If that's not a prayer for humility, I don't know what is. Open my heart with your Torah. Let my soul pursue your commandments. If anyone opposes me and intends harm against me, quickly nullify their plan and spoil their intention. I find a lot of meaning in that part too, because I feel like I need to stick up for myself, or I'm afraid of what other people could do to me. And when you're valuable and you know you're valuable, you want to be protected. You know, you don't want other people to come along and hurt you. We don't want harm and opposition. But this takes it off of me, takes it out of what I'm afraid of, and hands it to Hashem. The humble person doesn't need to stick up for themselves as so much because they trust Hashem. A lot of these traits are linked with each other. You know, humility leads to peace. It leads to less anger. Trust in God leads to humility. Humility also leads to trust in God. They intertwine with each other. The next part of the prayer is, let it be your will, O Lord my God, and God of my fathers, that no person's jealousy would be incited against me, and not my jealousy against others. I find that when I'm too self-focused, either in a way that's prideful or in a way that's like, I'm not good enough, this low self-esteem, I might get a little thrill out of being able to make someone else jealous of me. Or I might be very prone to being jealous of others. That part of the prayer hits me frequently too. Let no person's jealousy be incited against me, and not my jealousy against others. Let me not become angry today, nor let me anger you. Now, of course, pride and low self-esteem can, those people who have pride and low self-esteem can both be easily angered. But it's good to remember also how easily we can make mistakes that might anger Hashem. That helps a little bit with humility. So let me not become angry. Give me the humility to not become angry with other people. And let me not anger you. Rescue me from the evil inclination and place in my heart submission and humility. There it is in black and white again. O King, our God, bring unity to your name in your world. Build your city, establish your house, and complete your palace. Gather the exiles, redeem your flock, and gladden your congregation. Act for the sake of your name Act for the sake of your right hand. Act for the sake of your Torah. Act for the sake of your holiness, so that your beloved ones may be delivered. Save by your right hand and answer me. Now in that last paragraph, notice that everything we just prayed for, we're asking Hashem to hear our prayer, but everything was for his sake. And that's the key to humility. Everything that we need in life, why do we need it? To serve Hashem. We don't need it for ourselves, not even food. Our need for, even for rest and recreation. Why? So that we can get back to serving Hashem. It's not about us. So throughout the next month, I hope that you'll study more about humility, because we really couldn't cover very much. There's lots of teaching out there. There's articles and books. Musar books are great. But there's a lot of teachers online that cover Musar subjects, and humility is almost always at the front of the list. But question it. Wrestle with it and how it works in your life and how it fits into all the complicated little parts of your life, because it's not going to look the same for everybody, and it's not going to look the same in every situation. There are times, like we see with Moshe, he's called the most humble man by the Torah. He's not passive. He's not mousy. He's courageous. Why? For Hashem. He's not sticking up for his own honor, but he is definitely, he definitely doesn't shy away from acting boldly and putting other people in their place. But it's coming from a place of humility. So another fun thing to do might be look up Bible Gateway and just, or some other Bible search tool that you might have access to, and look up the word humble and humility and just see what you find. There's some really beautiful sentiments expressed in the Psalms and in Proverbs, and throughout the epistles, humility is talked about and listed as virtues that we as disciples should have. I feel like there's so much more that I could have spent another several months preparing for this class, and I might have felt prepared. So may we serve our Master Yeshua as he taught us in humility, and keep our eyes fixed on the kingdom.